Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Happy Saturday, happy Sunday, folks, wherever you may be in the good old USA or around the globe. You know, I actually got a letter from Switzerland, and I get letters all the time from France and Israel and who knows where. And Mary, I believe the gal's name was, tells me I have a large contingent of listeners over there in Switzerland. So welcome, Switzerland. That's great. Well, look, we have another big show for you today, and we're going to be doing our rat-a-tat-tat of current events, which are going to tie in not only to the historical story, which is a given on the Right Side Radio, but it's going to tie into our next segment, our second installment on climate change. And I don't mean climate change, you know, because of global warming and all this conjured nonsense. I mean geoengineering, man-induced, intentional, purposeful climate change that's affecting you and me and our kids and the planet and every living thing on it intentionally. And we're going to do, finally, after a five-week delay due to lack of time, we're going to do China attacking the United States, one of the five prongs, maybe putting aside military, one of the key prongs of their attack, which is the financial attack on the U.S. dollar and the U.S. economy. And I'm going to be talking to you folks, you know, philosophically, probably in the last segment of the show. We'll see how it progresses. I'm going to ask you, in fact, I'm going to ask you right now, I want you to kind of sit back. I want you to relax if you're driving. I want you to kind of sit back and sip your coffee if you're at home, or maybe noodle on a pad if you're at work. I'm going to ask you to kind of expand your thoughts. I'm going to ask you, and I ask this often, I'm going to ask you to step out of your box. I'm going to ask you to imagine the unimaginable. That's going to be the last segment of this show. It's going to tie in, and it's going to make you think, I hope, about all the things we've been talking about, well, forever, but certainly over the last 2 or 3 months. The COVID nonsense. The vaccine that's not a vaccine. The lockdowns that weren't necessary. The spewing of false information by the oligarchical cabal of government, democratic Marxists, and big tech, and media. The shell game that's being played with Barack Obama in his third term and cadaver out there in front as the fall guy. The historical stories I've brought you. The history of propaganda. The histories of genocide. The histories of reparations. The histories of civilizational collapse, that kind of historical segment series that we're in right now, along with a host of other things, the history of propaganda. Look, everything is interconnected. Everything is interrelated. None of this is an accident. There are no coincidences whatsoever. And I'm going to bring to your mind some of the things which have happened over the last, 20, 30 years. And I'm going to ask you to think about the possibilities. Think about the interconnection. Think about the interrelationship of all we have seen and heard and that we have experienced as a people and as individuals. And I'm going to be asking you some what ifs. I think you'll find it quite a mind exercise. So let's get started, shall we? We're going to have our historical story first. And this is the second or third segment, I've lost track of time, of the collapse of civilizations. In all these historical stories, kind of culminating in this series I'm doing on the civilizational collapse, there's common threads. It doesn't matter if it was in BC or AD or 100 years ago or 20 years ago. It doesn't matter what country it was, what continent it occurred on. The common threads are there is divisions sown within a society. It may be by provocateurs. It may be through propaganda. It may be just through the course of events. It may be instigated by foreign powers. Disease and famine and climate change due to, in the long time past, climatological events that were natural, the eruption of volcanoes, the spewing of ash and SO2. All of these things are precipitators of civilizational collapse. Civilizational collapse is almost a step-by-step process. In some cases, in terms of history, it's relatively quick. In others, it's a slow downward spiral, accentuated by this problem and that problem, which grow and fester and accentuate that twisting into the bottom of the toilet bowl of civilizations, where many, many, many rest. In fact, there has been no civilization, think about this, there's been no civilization that has ever survived forever, period, bar none, no exceptions. Let's review again what a civilization is. The word civilization, and I don't think I've talked about this before, relates to the Latin word civilis, or city. So the most basic definition of the word civilization is a society made up of cities. But you know, early in the development of the term civilization, anthropologists and others use civilization and civilized society to differentiate between societies they found culturally superior, you know, and of course they were a part of those societies, and those that they thought were culturally inferior because they referred to as average or barbaric, and other societies that were morally wrong and backward, you know, all subjective terms. There is agreement, however, that civilizations have some kind of urban settlements. They are not nomadic. The support of people living within the settlement to each other and to the community as a whole. And labor gets divided into specific jobs, which, by the way, is called the division of labor. So not everyone has to focus on growing their own food. I mean, if you are concentrated on survival, you can't concentrate on advancement. And from this specialization of various people doing various things comes class structure and government, which are both aspects of civilization. Another criteria for civilization seems to be, anthropologists agree, a surplus of food, which comes, by the way, from having tools to aid in the growing of crops and this division of labor I just talked about. Writing, trading, artwork, monuments, all those kind of things, the development of science and technology are all aspects of civilizations. Societal collapse, which is also known as civilizational collapse, of course, is the failure or the fall of these complex human societies. It's characterized by the loss of cultural identity. Oh, what's happening on our southern border? And of social economic complexity. Gee, do you think we have a complex economy? Do you think we have a complex class system here in the United States and the Western world? The downfall of government. By the way, folks, how does the downfall of government begin? Oh, corruption and lack of trust by those that it governs. Does any of this sound familiar yet? And the rise of violence. Obviously, that's obvious. All you got to do is turn on the boob tube any given night, and if they're not censoring it, see the riots that are occurring hither, yither, and yon, the latest being Minneapolis for the umpteenth time, and the mass shootings and other types of violence which play out daily in front of our very eyes. Now, there are causes of some of this violence, particularly gun violence, which I'm going to get into in the last segment of this show, when I ask you to step outside of your box. But nonetheless, it's occurring. And now I'm going to give you some historical examples of foreign invasions, mass migration, instability and collapse of societies due to changes in the weather, changes in soil condition, famines, socioeconomic disruption, internal violence and division. Let's start talking about the Sea Peoples. The Sea Peoples are a very mysterious group of people. It was kind of a loose amalgamation of very fierce seaborne warriors from a number of different points on the globe. The historians know very little about these folks. They're not even sure who all constituted them. But the Sea Peoples were a powerful military force. They attacked by sea, obviously. They chewed away on empires and civilizations almost across the planet. And this is back in the Late Bronze Age. It was one of the precipitators of the Late Bronze Age collapse, which is going to be next week's historical story. And hey, a fascinating one, I guarantee you. The Hittite Empire began to show signs of decline after a big battle with the Egyptians in 1285 BC. It was weakened further by continuing attacks by the Sea Peoples, and eventually it was starved out of existence when the Sea Peoples captured its main port that imported grain. Because of, at that time, climate change, the Hittites and the Hittite Empire was undergoing a severe famine. So you see a combination of events transpiring here to bring down one of the major empires, one of the major civilizations of that time. The Minoan civilization, which was based in Crete, what we now know as Crete, it centered around religious rituals and seaborne trade, and it was absorbed by the Mycenaean Greece. Greece, at that time, then went into serious decline around 1200 BC, also due to various military conflicts, including the Dorian invasion from the north, and guess what? Attacks from the Sea People. In the 3rd century BC, an Eurasian nomadic people called the Zi began threatening China's frontiers. They were beat back by China, but then they turned their attention westward, and they displaced other tribes in Eastern and Central Europe, and that led to a cascade of events. None of this stuff happens in a vacuum. Every domino, every civilizational domino, every societal domino that falls precipitates the fall of many other dominoes in many other directions, in many other locations. This is a common theme of history since the beginning of man. It didn't necessarily result in the immediate downfall of other civilizations. It took time. The seeds were sown. You know, the seeds of the next and upcoming dominoes of human civilization rising and falling. Because all these events always had some type of ancillary effects. They turned fertile grounds into wastelands that could no longer grow food. They spread disease, particularly as society became more agrarian. We're going to be talking about that in just a few minutes. They upset armies. In other words, when famines came and disease came, armies didn't have enough, should we say, national transplants to put into the ranks, had to turn to slaves and to mercenaries. I mean, it's one of the things that happened with the Western Roman Empire. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes, too. So everything that occurs has a ripple effect on all other civilizations on the planet. And right now, we are under attack by China. In every facet of civilizational foundations, they are students of history, and they are on the attack. They're using what history has taught them to undermine their greatest enemy and the only thing standing in their way, the United States of America. Now, those folks that were marauding throughout Southeast Asia, etc., the dominoes that affected, or should we say the dominoes that resulted from their plunderings, included the rise of Attila the Hun as the leader of the Huns. And they went as far, believe it or not, as at that time, Gaul, that is today's France. I mean, an amazing story of conquest. And the Huns sacked northern Italian cities like Milan. I mean, literally burned it to the ground and killed tens of thousands of people wherever they went. They were a major factor eventually in the collapse of the West Roman Empire after it was divided into two because it had grown so large. Then there was North Africa's populous, flourishing civilization, and it collapsed. It exhausted all its resources in internal fighting, right? That division thing. And suffering devastation, complete devastation, from the invasion of the Bedouin tribes, and who ransacked all the major cities in North Africa. By the way, all the lands that were ravaged by the Bedouins were noted by an historian at the time to become completely arid and desert-like, incapable of growing food, which again precipitated further collapse of other civilizations. We've talked in previous historical stories on this subject about Genghis Khan and the Mongol hordes, who were virtually unstoppable, best light cavalry in the world, tactics that their enemies had never seen. I mean, later Mongol leaders such as Timur destroyed countless cities, slaughtered tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people. They ransacked China, Russia, the Middle East, and Islamic Central Asia. The Mongol hordes were only stopped, turned back, and decisively defeated by one peoples, the Vietnamese. How do you like that? And you know what? This is in 1471, and the Vietnamese, after defeating the Mongols, kind of got a lust for conquest of their own, and they divided into two camps, you'll never guess. Oh yeah, the North and the South. You think all that started in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s? Oh no, 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 no. Oh no, no, no. The seeds of what happened there in the Vietnam War were sown almost 500 years before. And coming up next, I'm going to tell you the amazing outcome of this North-South Vietnam rivalry, which began 500 years before you thought it did. Vietnamese pushed south, kind of an uneasy truce between two rival domineering families, and they subjected the Chams, C-H-A-M-S, and that entire Southeastern Asian territory to their whims and their control. And then the Vietnamese turned against one another. You know that internal strife? Divided we fall, and united we stand. There was a family by the name of the Trinh family in the north, and the Nguyen family in the south, and they went at it hard. First of all, they were in a rivalry to seize more Cham provinces, and they were seized by the Nguyen warlords. In the end, the Nguyen family took control of Vietnam and established a dynasty, but they had been weakened by the literally centuries-long fight with the Chams, the rivalry between them and the Trinhs, and the civilization of the Vietnamese and their dynasty collapsed. Well, you know, there are other examples of this. The New Kingdom of Egypt. We've talked in the previous shows about the Old Kingdom of Egypt. I told you it resurrected. The New Kingdom of Egypt managed to defeat the Sea Peoples, the same Sea Peoples that had defeated the Hittites and taken their one port. And the Egyptians just couldn't quite get it together. They went into a steep decline. The collapse of all the other societies of the Eastern Mediterranean, this is part of the Bronze Age collapse we're going to be talking about next week, disrupted established trade and travel, and that severely affected Egypt. It also started a kind of region-wide economic depression. Government workers in Egypt went either unpaid or underpaid. That began the first labor dispute in recorded history. I mean, it's really fascinating. And basically, the government folks said, we're not working anymore until we get paid. This completely undermined royal authority because, obviously, if government folks weren't working, the government couldn't do anything for its subjects. And its subjects, therefore, began to hate the government and distrust it. Oh, is any of this sounding familiar? Well, food prices rose. There was a major famine, which precipitated this rise. And the rise in food prices, which, by the way, were 8 times their normal values, and occasionally they would spike to 24 times their normal values, started a huge inflation in everything. And that further weakened Egypt because it destroyed, or further destroyed, its economic underpinnings, which were already under severe stress due to famine, which was being caused by natural climate change, and by continual wars, which they won with the Sea People, and which, ironically, they won with the Hittites. In the early 14th century AD, Britain suffered repeated rounds of crop failures due to unusually heavy rainfalls and flooding. Most of the livestock either starved or drowned. Food prices skyrocketed. King Edward II, he attempted to rectify the situation by imposing price controls. Well, as always, that backfired. Vendors simply refused to sell at such low prices. The act was abolished by the Lincoln Parliament in 1316. But all across continental Europe, things were at least as just as bad. In the meantime, they were fighting off invasions or incursions, like in the north of England by raids from Scotland, and across France and England, the Hundred Year War. All of these things, which were precipitated, by the way, most historians feel, by the eruption of Mount Tararua, and I probably mispronounced it, in New Zealand, which erupted in 1314, that seemed to cause this precipitous change in climate and the rains. And it also kind of was the beginnings of the Little Ice Age, which I talked about in the last show. The Hundred Year War and the Black Death that soon followed, and I'll explain that in just a minute, why this was all tied in, along with this unavoidable change in weather, which led to famine. It decimated Europe's population. In fact, all told, between disease and war and famine and all the other calamities, Europe lost half its population, half of its population, Europe and Britain. You know, historically, the dawn of agriculture, even though this is kind of counterintuitive, led to the rise of contagious diseases, coupled with climate change events that could not be foreseen, foretold, or changed, famine, decomposition of soils so that crops could not be produced, the death of livestock. But when agriculture really began to rise, when the hunter-gatherer societies became agricultural societies, that's when cities were established. There were higher population densities. There was more frequent contact with livestock. There was greater contamination of water supplies, higher concentrations of garbage, poor sanitation, lack of medical knowledge, superstitions, and sometimes the combination of disasters that we've talked about have reshaped societies, Western, Eastern, all around the globe, in ways, well, profound ways. Hundreds of millions of people, perhaps billions over the course of time, have died. Empires have fallen, civilizations have collapsed, and entire generations have been annihilated. And as people became more agrarian, as cities sprang up, as all these conditions continued to manifest themselves almost exponentially, disease and biological warfare, intentional introduction of disease by enemies, became more and more a factor in the rise and fall of civilizations. You know, there were three plagues that brought down the Roman Empire. Oh, sure, it was subject to corruption, and it was subject to inflation, it was subject to economic pressures, it was too far flung, it was overextended. There are many, many factors. But the three kind of nails in the Roman Empire coffin were three plagues. The first was the Antonin Plague, AD 165 to 180. It was probably smallpox or measles, most historians agree, and probably started in China and spread to the west via the Silk Road. Dreadful mortality rates. One-third to one-half of the population, 60 to 70 million people. Remember, the world was pretty tiny then, perished. Roman cities suffered from overcrowding, poor hygiene, unhealthy diets, and they became the epicenters of the disease. Gee, is this sounding familiar, folks? The disease reached as far as Gaul, you know, modern-day France. It mauled the Roman army, I mean, decimated. In fact, along the Rhine, where Rome had built huge defenses against the Germanic peoples, the legions were so decimated that they had to be filled with freed slaves, German mercenaries, criminals, and gladiators. Eventually, obviously, the Germanic tribes broke through the Roman line. Then, the situation was further compounded because the deaths of all these people, it created an economic depression, which led to a food crisis and a drastic shortage of businessmen, which disrupted trade because the businessmen had died. Ultimately, it was the Roman army, Roman cities, the size of the empire, and the trade routes, without which, ironically, Rome would have had no power or influence, and would not even have existed, that facilitated the spread of these diseases. People had to have somebody to blame. They blamed Marcus Aurelius and his co-emperor, Lucius Verus. So it created a rift between the government and the people. And of course, you had to have other scapegoats. So many in the Roman Empire blamed Christianity for the spread of disease. You know, a kind of a theme that was taken up by Hitler later, blaming Jews for disease in Nazi Germany. The onslaught of disease was followed by another plague, the Plague of Cyprian, from AD 249 to AD 262. And then it was followed by another plague, perhaps the worst of the three, the Plague of Justinian, from 541 and 542. Together, these plagues cracked the foundations of the Roman Empire. And if they did not cause its proximate decline, they were one of the key factors in the collapse of probably the greatest empire the world has ever seen on a relative basis. Interesting to note that the Western Roman Empire had basically collapsed. It was overrun by the Germanic tribes for all the reasons we discussed, but the Eastern Empire kind of stood its ground. And because there was a peace treaty with the Persians, Emperor Justinian the Great, i.e. the Justinian Plague, was able to concentrate on recapturing territories that had belonged to the Western Empire. And his generals achieved a number of really big victories, recaptured a great deal of the ground. But the Plague of Justinian, which I just talked about, stopped the reemergence of the Eastern Roman Empire, and in the end, doomed it to failure. Other effects, too, unforeseen and incredible effects, which affected civilizations and their rise and fall. Before the Justinian Plague, the Mediterranean world, you know, the Bronze Age, which we're going to talk about next week, very commercially successful. I mean, culturally stable. After the plague, it fractured into a trio of civilizations battling for power. You know, that division thing again. The Islamic civilization, the Byzantine Empire, and what became known as medieval Europe. With so many people dead from the plagues, the supply of workers, many of whom, by the way, were slaves, was critically short, and landowners had no choice if they were going to till their land but to lend pieces of land to persons that they called serfs, who worked the land in exchange for military protection and other privileges. This was the beginnings of feudalism. During this time period, because all civilizations and all countries and all empires have enemies. You know, there's always somebody who wants what you have. It is just the laws of nature. Whether you are a nation, whether you are an empire or civilization, or whether you are simply Joe Blow across the street, biological weapons developed during this time. They were probably used before. I've given you a whole history lesson, or should I say a historical story on the use of biological weapons and their evolution over time, several months ago. You can go into the archives on therightsideradio.com, type in biological warfare, biological weapons, and listen to those shows. But as biological weapons began to be used, as armies and folks who wanted to conquer other civilizations, they began to realize that biological weapons are economical. Basically, they turn an enemy casualty, every enemy casualty that's infected, into a delivery system of the weapon. And as such, They were favored in armed conflicts in the past. Did you know that more soldiers died of disease than in combat until recently? And by recently, I mean World War I. Civilization's most adaptable, most historically oriented, most patient, and should we say most cunning in its long-term planning is the Chinese. And they learned the lessons of biological warfare very early. Huh. How do you like that? And next week, the collapse of the Bronze Age civilizations and threads, or should I say cycles, which are inherent in the collapse of civilizations, as has been proven by anthropologists and historians. Folks, it's time for hair-raising, eyeball-rolling, and jaw-dropping, rat-a-tat-tat current events, a on-the-right-side staple. So, in Vermont, the Rhino governor, this is a Republican, folks, he says, he wants illegals to vote in local elections in the state of Vermont. Well, you know, Vermont has elected Bernie Sanders umpty-ump times, so maybe it's understandable. And then President Biden, Obama, he's decided to lift the bans on TikTok and WeChat because, you know, we'd like to help the Red Chinese put together dossiers on every American citizen and all their private habits and, shall we say, peculiarities so that they can be extorted. Then we have California. I'm going to give you some headlines here. You know, this is a perfect example. Do you remember my historical stories on propaganda? I think it was 4 weeks ago and 3 weeks ago. It was a two-part series. And if you haven't heard them, please listen to them. Very informative and fascinating. You know, there are all these articles coming out. As we know, it's very hot around the country. And as we're going to be discussing in our geoengineering segment, there's a high likelihood that this is being induced. You know, everything is connected. This heat wave, it's something for the press and big tech and all the cabal to jump up and down about and scream climate change, Green New Deal. So in one day, this was 2 days ago, I looked at several news sources, Yahoo, the Washington Post, the New York Times. Here are some of the headlines. This is in one day. California and much of the American West face mega drought brought on by climate change. By the way, here's an article said, thanks in part to the rising temperatures due to climate change, extreme or exceptional drought conditions are now occurring in 74% of the state of California, while 72% of the western U.S. is classified as experiencing severe drought, according to data from the U.S. Drought Monitor. Gee, I wonder who runs that. California Governor Newsom declared a drought emergency. Oh, well, gruesome Newsom, he's right on it, folks. We got nothing to worry about. In 41 of the state's 58 counties, putting in place water conservation restrictions, which does what, folks? Remember our discussion on civilizational collapse? Oh, that's right. If you don't have water, you can't grow crops. If you don't grow crops, you don't have food. Where is all this going? Here's another headline. CBS News, dangerous heat wave threatens a drought-stricken West. A dangerous heat wave, even as measured against the standards of the often scorching Southwest, is in the process of developing now and will continue to intensify this week. This comes on top of the worst drought across the Western United States in modern history. By the way, that's totally untrue. Not only does this pose a health risk, but the hot weather and drought combined means the ground will only further dry out, making for tinderbox fire conditions. 27% of the West is in exceptional drought, the highest category. The 20-year record since 2000 was only 11%. Here's another one. Record high temperatures scorch Western states in preview of climate change future. Ooh, that's Yahoo News. On Monday, 43 million people found themselves under heat alerts in the United States. A week of triple-digit triple-digit temperatures made worse by climate change is forecast across much of the American West this week, with records poised to fall in several towns, cities, and states across the drought-plagued region. Another long-lasting extreme heat event strains the West's grid, could spark wildfires. Here's another potentially deadly heat wave to shatter records across the Southwest. Here's another. Letters to the editor. I guess they liked this one so much they actually made it a headline. This isn't a drought or a heat wave. This is the new normal. Here's another one. Temperatures to reach up to 108 today in parts of the Bay Area during heat wave. Here's another one. Doctors in the U.S. are anticipating a rise of burn injuries following this week's extended heat wave. How about another? Local farmers seeing decreased water supply due to drought. Here's another. Dangerous heat wave grips U.S. Southwest as temperatures hit 120 degrees Fahrenheit in some areas. Here's another. Texas power grid manager issues week-long conservation alert. And here, yeah, it goes on and on and on and on. Here's another. Historic heat wave could cancel some valley events. Another. Wildfires ravage a drought-stricken Southwest. And another. Doctors warn of burns from asphalt as heat wave hits the U.S. Look, as I go through this rat-a-tat-tat, the upcoming rat-a-tat-tat stories I'm about to share with you, you tell me if there isn't a pattern here. So, we're going to be talking about this geoengineering. I'm digressing just a moment from rat-a-tat-tat, excuse me. We're going to be talking about this geoengineering, the ability to use energy and to use particulate matter, which is being purposely placed in the atmosphere, to using radio wave frequencies to heat or cool and to create domes which preclude precipitation or to induce precipitation or storms. Think about that. Now we have this severe, quote-unquote, drought and this severe hot weather. And yes, it's hot. And yes, there's parts of the United States that are dry. But guess what? 200 years ago was the same and 400 years ago was the same and et cetera. And then we have all these articles that come out literally together, all from different sources, but all obviously coordinated. And then we have some things all of a sudden, simultaneously occurring in Congress. Gee, do you think this is a coincidence? Well, if you do, tell me what you think after this rat-a-tat-tat. So there's a bunch of senators trying to hammer out this bipartisan consensus on the budget, et cetera, et cetera. And Tuesday, this is just a few days ago, right in the middle of all these articles, the same day that all these articles came out and they've been just continuing, you know, hammer. They're just not letting up. So Senator Ed Markey, oh, Democrat from Massachusetts, ha, what a surprise. And Merkley, a Democrat from Oregon, gee, what a surprise. They hold a joint news conference right in the middle of this press frenzy, right, this media frenzy. And they wanted to address their concerns. Quote, our Republican colleagues are running the same playbook against climate action. Remember, this is what the budget's all about, the Green New Deal, that they did to Waxman Markley 12 years ago. Dither, delay, and deny. This time, we are prepared to attack. Huh. All right. By the way, they were referring to the cap and trade bill, which is insanity, which the Democratic Marxists tried to foist on the American people in 2009. It passed the House. It never even got to the floor in the Senate. Markley suggested, by the way, in his conference, that any attempt at bipartisan agreement was a fool's errand. Hmm. Let me give you a quote. The Republicans are the party of gas and oil. It's time for us to put on that classic song by Fleetwood Mac. It's time for us to go our own way. This is clear as day. No climate, no deal. What do you think, folks? Think this is all coincidence? You create the disaster. You take advantage of the crisis. You use the propaganda to create media hysteria. And then you ram home what the real agenda is. Huh. Does this sound like a common and recurring playbook? Couple quickies for you. Obama, is going to reopen the Palestinian Liberation Organization office in D.C. that President Trump shut down. That's great. And President Gadaver is closing the office that Trump set up to help victims of illegal alien crimes. The American people always come first in the Obama-Gadaver administration. And when we come back, we're going to tell you what a rather famous liberal is beginning to think of his Democratic Marxist Party's plans, and a whole bunch more rat-a-tat-tat, which is going to make you question what is real and what is not. With rat-a-tat-tat, outdone, by the way, Elizabeth Warren, you know, Pocahontas, the other loony Democratic Marxist senator from Massachusetts, she demanded, it just has to happen, that her fellow federal lawmakers confront cryptocurrency. In fact, you'll love this, she blamed Bitcoin for, quote, worsening the climate change crisis, unquote. Yeah, listen, she's talking to a Senate banking subcommittee. Really? And why don't we say that she strongly suggested that cryptocurrency is responsible for everything from an increase in international crime to a spike in carbon emissions, increased opportunities to scam investors, quote, assist criminals and worsen the climate crisis, unquote. I'm really not making this up, folks. Warren suggested, by the way, let me quote this because you can't make it up, one of the easiest and least disruptive things federal legislators can do to curb the climate crisis is to take action against environmentally wasteful cryptocurrencies. Okay, whatever you say. You know, along these lines, it might not be a bad thing for the Republicans to be obstructionist for once, to grow a spine. If you go back, once again, in short-term history, the Republicans recorded their biggest win against Bill Clinton when they were being accused of being obstructionist. You know, they had the game plan for America, Newt Gingrich. This is kind of borne out, like another rat-a-tat-tat for you, by a poll by Gallup. It showed that America is not changing as Democrats would like us to believe, folks. Liberals, I'm not even using the word liberals, progressives, make up the smallest segment of voters, only 25%. Do you remember my historical stories on the 3.5% that create new societies, that create revolutions? Yeah. Conservatives make it up 36% and moderates 35%. By themselves, conservatives hold an 11-point advantage over lefties. If you add the moderates in, there's a 47% advantage over the lefties. Now, let's put on our thinking caps. The Democrats are fighting the audit in Maricopa County and Georgia, and now another one that's beginning to gather steam in Pennsylvania. But they say it's the fairest election of all time. But these stats say that 25% of the population is progressive, and the rest of the population isn't. I wonder if there was any election fraud. I'm scratching my head. All right. By the way, in that same poll, 37% of the people think the country is headed in the right direction. None of this is real good for Democrats come 2022, folks. But we're only going to win if we get some things done. I'm going to talk to you about that in the last segment. So Bill Mayer, he's not one of my favorite people, but sometimes he exhibits far more common sense than you would attribute to a Democratic Marxist. And in a recent show, Real Time with Bill Mayer, he just went crazy. Kind of a huge dose of logic. Wow. He was talking about forgiving student debt. Colleges have turned into giant luxury daycare centers with overpaid babysitters anxious to indulge every student Wildest Dreams. Then he talked about Laura Laughlin's daughter, Olivia Jade. He said, here's a quote from Olivia Jade. I don't know how exactly I'm going to attend, but I do want to experience of like game days and partying, unquote. Here's what Mayer's comment was, quote, yeah, I'm not effing paying for that, unquote. Go Bill. Go Bill. Oh, my. And then he had another kind of dose of common sense that he decided to blast out to the world. By the way, upsetting the Democratic Marxists. Quote, one of the frustrations I had while I was off, as I was watching this war go on in Israel, Israel is having very quick wars. This one was 11 days, but most of them you can count by days. And they were facing whole armies. It was frustrating to me because one-on-one liberal media declined to defend Israel. Really, we've become in this country now where we are one sick issue. End quote. Well, you know, you have to admire somebody who's an idol of the left who decides to speak out on behalf of America and common sense. So you go, Bill. Oh, I do have some good news for you here in this rat-a-tat-tat. A real good court case for our side. In fact, we've had several. We've lost a few, too. Judge Terry A. Doughty, that's D-O-U-G-H-T-Y, U.S. District Court in Monroe, Louisiana. He has ruled that the administration, you know, Barack Obama, a.k.a. President Cadaver, quote, doesn't have the legal right to stop leasing federal territory for oil and gas production without approval for Congress, unquote. This judge, by the way, was appointed by Donald Trump. Go Donald. He also said that states that are suing the federal government, largely southern and coastal states in this particular litigation, will be harmed immediately as the clause in this illegal executive order prevents them from collecting lease bids and bonuses from oil and gas prospectors. By the way, the states who filed this lawsuit were Louisiana, Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, Georgia, Mississippi, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, Oklahoma, Texas, Utah, and West Virginia. I mean, where's Wyoming in this mix? Hello, Governor Gordon. Let's stop being milquetoast, shall we? Hey, everybody's talking about the hot housing market. Folks, I have a lot of experience in real estate. A lot. Let me tell you that what goes up comes down. What goes down goes up. Everything is cyclical. External events can exacerbate cycles, as they have in the recent past, think 2008. There's a few little cracks in that shiny armor of a raging housing market right now. I'm going to bring them to your attention. I'm not saying the bottom's going to fall out tomorrow. It's just my job to kind of open your eyes a little bit. Starts surged 50% year over year in May. However, they fell in the Northeast. Warning sign number one. Even though they rose 50% year over year, they only rose 3.6% on a seasonally adjusted basis. And that comes out to 1.572 million starts last month. But economists were expecting 1.63 million. So under projections. Okay, lumber prices fell for the first time in about 6 months. Give or take, it depends on the product, but about an average of 22% in May. Permits for future construction dropped 3% to 1.681 million units in May, which, by the way, also missed the economists' projections of permits for future construction being 1.73 million units in May. You know, these are all lagging indicators, okay? Well, I'm sorry. Most of these are forward indicators. The lagging indicator is actual starts because those permits were pulled 60, 90, 120 days ago. There was also a drop in home builder confidence. And this is by the National Association of Home Builders Wells Fargo Housing Market Index. That index fell 2 points in June to 81, which is a 10-month low. So I'm just bringing you the news, bringing you the stats, because I know you haven't seen them. Your local realtor hasn't showed you, and you need to know. A party does not go on forever, folks. And if you're playing a game of musical chairs, you don't want to be the last one standing. Since I've been talking about it for 5 weeks and we haven't gotten to it, let's go to our good friend, our mortal enemy, China, and what they have planned for the U.S. dollar, the U.S. economy, and you and me. I've brought you many, many, many segments over a very long period of time, years, over China and China's regard of the United States as its true and singular mortal enemy, and as the only roadblock to Chinese world domination, which the Chinese are bent on. You know, any time your enemy tells you why they want you gone and how they're going to get you gone, and you don't listen, you are a fool. And unfortunately, our so-called leaders in this country for the last 20, 25 years have been losers. They have been losers. The entire country now is subject to a direct threat from China, militarily, socially, economically, financially, and as we've seen from COVID, in every other way imaginable. Chinese defense ministers have told us exactly how they're going to bring the United States to their knees, starting with a biological attack. Oh, gee, what a surprise. Do we remember 2020? These speeches have been made across a wide breadth of years. 1989, 2004, and yes, 2019. I really suggest, if you folks and new listeners have not heard those speeches, because I read parts of them on this show and have for years, jumping up and down, sounding the alarm, go to the February 22nd show on OnTheRightSideRadio.com and listen to it. It is chilling. In addition to attacking us militarily and biologically, as we've seen, that's old hand for China. It's old hand for countries, and biological weapons are old hand for the world. There's a Chinese general that says, contain the United States by attacking its finances. Well, yeah. Remember, they're telling you what they're going to do, folks. He's a major general. Quote, that's the way to control America's lifeblood. By the way, his name is Qiao Liang. He's a professor at the People's Liberation Army, PLA, National Defense University, and this is an op-ed published in China Military Online, which is the official mouthpiece of the PLA. I mean, they're right in our face, folks. They're laughing at us, particularly with the current administration. Quote, to effectively contain the United States, other countries shall think more about how to cut off the capital flow to the United States while formulating their strategies. He goes so far as to praise the economic impact on us, the USA, caused by the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attack. Quote, apart from political and mental impact, a much heavier blow was that it drove more than US $300 billion out of the country within a month. Blacktop's Partners is a major intelligence cyber strategy firm. They consult to a lot of Fortune 500 companies. The CEO is Casey Fleming. Quote, the U.S. has been in a protracted economic war that includes information war and financial war, and it's increasing, unquote. I might add, it also includes real warfare around the globe and through COVID, which was directed at the United States. All other countries were simply a side benefit. It's extremely critical. I'm continuing his quote. It's extremely critical. It's extremely serious. The financial throttling is all part of the economic warfare. The United States has been in a protracted economic war that includes information war and financial war. When Qiao from China, the major general, in 1999, when he was still a colonel, he co-authored a book called Unrestricted Warfare. He had a co-author, by the way, a guy by the name of Wang. In Unrestricted Warfare, the two Chinese co-authors promote the use of terrorism, cyber attacks, legal warfare, which is also called lawfare, by the way, and economic warfare against the United States. I'll be telling you what else these Chinese military co-authors say about the United States and how to get at us, how they're getting assisted, quite purposefully, by traitors within our own government and country, and what they have planned as the final stake through the heart of the U.S. dollar, the kill strike, so to speak. In addition to all of the major general who's part of the Chinese army that drills for one thing, to defeat the United States army, and Wang, they argue that the U.S. military limits its view of military advancement to technology, and folks, we know this is true, and ignores unconventional warfare environments, especially economic attacks. And they argue the United States is vulnerable in this regard, and China should target and act on those vulnerabilities. Unrestricted Warfare was published 17 years ago, but we can see these strategies being played out. And it's been one of the main texts cited by experts on China's use of cyber attacks and other forms of unconventional warfare. You know, this Chinese major general recently, this is like within the last weeks, wrote in this op-ed, has some similar concepts to his book, but he goes one step further. The Chinese military should leverage geopolitics to attack the United States financially. He talks about Russia and what would happen if just a pipeline was cut off in Russia, since they're so heavily dependent on oil. By the way, I'm sure Vlad, our other buddy, read that and got even more nervous because he's in a very uneasy alliance with China. The major general from the Red Chinese Army argues China should place strategic importance on key shipping channels, the South China Sea, the Malacca Strait, and the Gwadar Strait. That's exactly what they're doing, folks. They're following this book to a T. They're following the speeches of these defense ministers to a T. The United States has enjoyed supremacy in virtually every category of world domination and world power. But that really began after Bretton Woods, after World War II, solidified the dollar as the world's reserve currency. China knows this. So does Russia. Russia 2 weeks ago, for the first time, limited and in some cases banned investment in any U.S. dollar denominated investments by Russians. This is in a direct attack on the dollar, folks. The Chinese are busily, and they are way ahead of everybody else, developing a national blockchain currency. You know, a Chinese Bitcoin, if you will. The United States is behind them to a large degree. With the world moving more and more to technical platforms, the Chinese gambit is obvious. They've been buying gold for 20 years. They have more gold stockpiled than any other country, and in fact, almost all other countries combined, including the United States. They're obviously angling to come out with a blockchain Chinese yuan backed by gold. Just think about a currency, easy to use, worldwide, slap your phone to a screen, store your wealth in there, backed by gold, as opposed to the United States dollar, which is backed by nothing. It's a fiat currency. We're printing money to buy our own debt. That is one of the reasons, folks, we have inflation. It's one of the reasons the dollar has gone down almost 100% in the last 40 to 50 years. And the democratic Marxists that run this country are doing everything they can to hasten that downward spiral. The quantity of money, measures M2, by the way, by the Federal Reserve, has increased more than 32.9% since January 2020. In other words, one quarter of all the United States dollars in circulation have been created since January 2020. That's unprecedented for any civilization. It's unprecedented in modern history. I've given you lots of historical examples of empires and civilizations that did similar things and collapsed. History is a teacher. Economics is inevitable, and 2 + 2 = 4. There is no way around this. And in all this stuff, they're being aided and abetted by traitors in the United States. And by the way, around the world, because the Chinese yuan talks, you know? It's the Mandarin music of bribery and control. So a Chinese Fed coin, so to speak, could very well be a nail in the United States economic coffin. And nobody is doing anything about it. You know, everybody, basically it's Obama's administration back in because he's the real president. One of the guys that came in, his name is Kurt Campbell, former Obama State Department official, businessman. He's serving as a chief coordinator for President Kadhafi's, really Obama's, Asia policy on the National Security Council. Well, the foundation that he was with has promoted the Chinese army and China's Belt and Road Initiative, which has been deemed a national security threat by U.S. officials, and has partnered with Confucius Institutes and the U.S. Center, an educational nonprofit organization that the State Department has designated as a foreign mission. Basically, this man has been carrying Beijing's water and promoting Beijing's propaganda efforts to academics and others across the world for years. Marxist attacks on fossil fuels and American energy independence plays right into China and any other American enemy's hands. Right into it. It also strengthens adversaries such as Russia. If the U.S. isn't selling oil, Russia is selling oil, or Iran is selling oil. It's not like, gee, we don't sell oil and you're not going to drive your car over there or wherever you happen to be on any continent, name it. It is intentional. It's intentional to undercut America. And as an example, you know, President Kadhafi, i.e. President Obama, and his Chinese-loving, American-hating minions, Trump put in place executive orders which absolutely limited China's abilities and China's companies' abilities to manufacture parts that go into our U.S. grid. One of the first things that President Kadhafi, i.e. President Obama, did back in Obama's third term, now going on, is to lift that ban. Now, in an age of cyber attacks, in an age of information warfare, in an age of economic warfare, which is in your face, I mean, they are writing books about what to do and how to do it. They are giving speeches on what to do and how to do it, including, by the way, COVID. And we give them the back door into a grid where, with technological prowess, they could easily create rampant destruction of the American grid. We fail to armor our grid against rapid advances that the Chinese and the Russians have made in hypersonic EMP weapons. You know, just a few EMPs at the right elevation in the right location across the continental United States would basically wipe out this civilization. And China and Russia would, jump up and down. There's lots of resources here that the Chinese want, folks, including space, and you and me, well, they care less about you and me, energy, you name it. This is an all-out frontal assault on democracy. Republics in general around the globe, anything which is not state-controlled or state-owned, communism or socialism, and on anything that stands in China's way of being the number one economic, military, technological powerhouse, bar none. These generals write books on how to take the United States down on many different levels. And China rapidly builds its military, including through the supposed pandemic, that they created and fostered and manipulated and propagandized. I mean, do you see how all my historical stories are coming together here? Gee, the Pentagon is going to be prioritizing climate change as the national security defense, according to Lloyd Austin, the defense secretary. Quote, immediately take appropriate policy actions to prioritize climate change considerations in our activities and risk assessments. I mean, these people are worse than morons. They are traitors. And even throwing the United States under the Chinese world domination and globalist bus, the Marxist left, which, according to the Gallup survey, is 25% of this country, they can't even be, they have to play their same little mind games, propaganda games, wording games, even on that. That executive order, which basically gives the vulnerabilities in the Chinese grid to the Chinese and accepts into the grid manufactured Chinese technology which the Chinese can plant and manipulate and control from afar, our entire power structure. Obama called it was, quote, the executive order on protecting public health and the environment and restoring science to tackle the climate crisis, unquote. Nonsense. It is not even close to that. You have to get involved. You guys and you guys and gals, you have to write your representatives and your senators. I don't care if you're in a blue state and they're morons. Write them. You know, in the end, most of these politicians only care about themselves, their pocketbook, and their power. And as you can see from Joe Manchin and Sinema down in Arizona, who may in fact think a little bit differently too, they'll do anything including throw their own kind under the bus to stay in power. We're going to delve further into this Chinese assault on our economy in many different ways. Aided by American traders, including how they plan and when they might plan to stop pegging the yuan to a basket of currencies and instead shift to an inflation targeting regime where they allow the exchange rate to fluctuate more freely and they introduce their gold-backed cryptocurrency, a final death blow to the U.S. economy and the U.S. dollar. But right now, we're going to go into climate change. Climate change as in climate manipulation, as in intentional climate change. For what nefarious purposes? I think we're going to start to explore that. What we're going to do, folks, is we're going to go into this man-induced climate change, and we're going to also extend a great part of that over to next week. There's a tremendous, terrific video. It's 2 hours long. It's long, but you can listen to it in parts. You can listen to it various times on the website under both climate control and family safety, because it is your family's safety. It's your family's lives. And it is terrific. And it has documentary evidence. It has filming of the scientific experiments that I've been talking about and will be talking about. I can't recommend it highly enough. If you have time, watch that. It'll bring you up to speed on many of the things I've been talking about and will be talking about next week in the third installment of geoengineering. Yeah, geoengineering at Earth's and our peril. And that's also going to leave me some time by extending part of that over to next week to sit back and talk to you about thinking out of the box, the what ifs, the what would you do ifs, what do you think if. It is extremely important. It might be one of the biggest services I bring you as your host. Off last week on geoengineering, we were talking about electromagnetic fields, an extremely powerful microwave projectors, frequency transmissions, which affect these nanoparticles which are being dissipated throughout Earth's atmosphere, and increases their frequency, their vibrations, where lower frequencies create cooler and higher frequencies heat these nanoparticles, conducting weather. And then with the use of these frequency transmissions, how this weather can be steered. You'll see on the video, if you watch it, on therightsideradio.com, you'll see actual radar images, pictorial images of artificial domes that are created to create high-pressure systems that no precipitation can penetrate. Gee, you think that might be going on right now, with this heat wave over the West? Do you notice how these weather events target almost entirely red states and red areas and agricultural and red areas in blue states? You think the Houston deal was that freeze, do you think that was an accident down there? Do you think that series of hurricanes that pummeled Louisiana and Houston, the oil refineries, were accidents? Do you think the drought in Northern California, which is conservative, is an accident? None of these things are accidents, folks. It's from NASA satellites show extraordinary manipulation. You know, this tech, this creation of nanoparticles to absorb or reflect or react to frequency waves came partially out of stealth technology, where particles are part of the metallic paint on stealth military aircraft that reflect or absorb radar waves, frequencies, if you will. Frequencies are based on size, the frequencies that are used, and these nanoparticles are all the same size. Frequency heats, it creates interaction between those particles and moisture, those particles in heat, those particles in cold. Documented cases of sub-zero freezes, which actually extend only several hundred feet above the surface of the earth. South Dakota, where 100,000 or so livestock were lost several years ago, is one example. Above that 100-foot artificial layer of sub-zero and outrageous cold was normal temperatures. Think about the series of snowfalls in Boston. You know, it's a blue area, so none of them was meant to cause real damage. It was meant to stir up, climate change support. Think about the ice balls in Lake Michigan. Now, Lake Michigan's water is 40 degrees, but you have tens of thousands of ice balls, some of them weighing up to 75 pounds, bobbing around and rolling up and down on the shore. How is that possible? You know, the sea surface, ice nucleotization, okay, it's kind of like sealing, it's like putting a glass surface on the sea, sealing the heat in, which affects polar ice and affects the caving of these ice flows into the sea, which you've seen, I'm sure, in National Geographic or millions of photos. All of this is meant to create an image or to have an effect. Defoliation programs in Vietnam, defoliation programs in the United States, and other programs, the cloud seeding that's going on, the contrails, which are not evaporation, remember folks, not condensation, because jet engines don't do that. They are particulate matter. The soil microbiology of the earth is being devastated. And as that soil microbiology deteriorates, as moisture is manipulated, as the amounts of sunlight reaching the forest canopy is manipulated and lessened, and the ozone layer depleted through the use of these nanoparticles, we see vast forests around the world, and particularly in the United States West, where the roots of trees can no longer get the nutrients that they want, where nutrient uptake is slowed. The forests are being killed by these geoengineering activities. It makes them susceptible, like any living organism. Their immune system cannot fight off beetles, boring beetles, disease, and of course, fires, which seem to be increasing in frequency, size, and intensity, even according to the firefighters who fight them. Stomata is the respiration of trees and plants. Because stomata has been reduced, because trees can't uptake nutrients, and the oxygen in the air has been depleted, we have less CO2 absorption. Rain ice, I'm sure you've seen it. I mean, it's becoming more and more prevalent even here in Wyoming. That comes from ionizing the atmosphere, which makes it more conductive, which creates electrical energies, which creates more dry lightning, which creates more forest fires. Aluminum, barium, and other chemicals in forest duff throughout the world and in the United States proves this unequivocally. These manipulations are now resulting in a potentially catastrophic Earth event methane is releasing from formerly frozen Siberian tundras and Arctic seafloors. Look, methane, folks, is 120 times more potent than CO2. There's enough methane in these frozen beds in various parts of the planet, which are now beginning to release their gases because of this manipulation, to turn the planet into Venus. Literally, Venus. There are now huge explosive craters, which satellite pictures are picking up out in the Siberian tundra. It looks like nuclear bombs went off. It's methane explosions. In the upper level wind currents, which are being manipulated, that affects water currents in the ocean. It turns warm water or moves warm water into cold water areas like the poles. Why hasn't more of this come out? Why is it really starting to get into people's consciousness now? Well, that's explained in that video by top military brass. But basically, the government has very cleverly, number one, siphoned off black money. I talked about that last week. But number two, they have compartmentalized all the various bits of information in geoengineering. And in the military, or in contractors for the military, you are privy only to your little piece of the pie. You never see the whole pie. You have the very in-your-face cooperation, propaganda cooperation between government, media, and big tech. And did you know there was a gag order on NOAA and all weathermen? It's illegal to talk about these processes going on. Remember this as we get into our final segment, which is expand your mental horizons. Think outside the box. Nanoparticles are not, let me underline, not found naturally in nature, but they're being found in all the test samplings through these artificial clouds that are being sown across the world. Next week, we're going to continue this series with morphology, aluminum reflectivity, iron and aluminum nanoparticles, and how they've been tuned up for microwave reception, and the use of military chaff, which happens to include all these things, by military planes, and aerotoxic syndrome, when you're breathing air in a plane that's flying in these layers of artificial clouds. But now, we're going to go right into mind expansion. Sit back, close your eyes, unless you're driving, and think along with me. Many of you have seen Logan's Run, you know, where a huge portion of the population is injected with something, and at various times the powers that be send out certain signals, and they all congregate to get their instructions or to get further brainwashing. How many of you have seen The Matrix, which basically is everything you see is kind of a technological mirage, and the real thing, you know, the little red pill real thing, is real life hidden behind this curtain of false fabric of conjured images and messages and propaganda and subliminal messaging and control. How about 1984? How many of you read Orwell's 1984? You know, we can see that playing out right now. The thought policed, mind control, propaganda, 2 + 2 = 5. Which a famous line in the book, and Pavlovian responses based on fear control the population. Facts we know for sure. The Davos crowd exists. They've talked about the global reset. They've talked about how we'll all be happy owning nothing. A major systemic and structural shift in the human mind and human populations. We know that Gates and his globalist friends think that only 2 billion people should be on the earth. You know, the other 5 to 6 billion breathing right now are superfluous, actually ruining the earth. We have seen the government, along with their cabal of big tech and media and that portion of the medical community, which are medical Nazis, pushing these vaccines, experimental drugs, which are not vaccines but gene therapies. Why this push? Isn't it weird? Doesn't any of this make you think? I mean, doesn't it feel unnatural? And now we've been talking about these nanoparticles that don't exist in nature but are being found in increasing and alarming quantities in our atmosphere and our soils and our seas. And the release of methane gases, the obvious byproduct of manipulating ocean currents and warming. and sunlight. And we've talked about mind control. I've brought you entire segments. Just type mind control, www.ontherightsideradio.com. MK Ultra, voice-to-skull technology using microwaves in susceptible minds. All of this stuff is fact. When you start putting together all those facts and many others, which we're going to discuss next week, and you look at this weird Houston freeze and the Mississippi floods of 2 years ago, which were highly abnormal, and this Western drought and the California fires, and you look at China, who is obviously in concert with the globalists, the WHO, Davos, Gates, Fauci, you name it. I mean, those are facts. When you see them employing every single technique, every single stimulus available to stimulate and motivate and propagate all those elements of civilizational collapse, and they're employing all that, all those techniques to get all those results, are historical stories why civilizations collapse, right? Famine, weather events, disease, collapse of the currencies, economic, financial, divisions within the population, wars, a siphoning of treasury, cash, blood, and treasure. This is all happening. And what else in the last 40, 50, 60, 70 years are mirages? Pearl Harbor? We've talked about that. The sinking of the Maine back there in the early 1900s. The collapse, kind of the weird collapse, of the Twin Towers. Not to say they weren't struck by jihadist planes, but what happened from there? And on, and on, and on, and now we are in the COVID time and the climate change time. Think about these things. And next week, we're going to discuss them in detail, and we're going to further step out of our boxes. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio. Thanks for listening.
Please remember, if you've missed any shows, just click on Show Archive and you'll find all of his shows. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side.